Hello, hello, everybody. We're going to be talking about Top Chef and its season finale, even though I have been very abusive to my vocal cords recently, not on purpose. But I will be with my lovely wife, Kaylee,
Hey.
and we will talk about season 19 of Top Chef. In Houston, and we're gonna finish it off. I waited this long so that we didn't disrupt the finale, and it's gonna be episodes 9 through 14.
It's a big one.
It is a big one. We'll be covering the highlights of Top Chef season 19 and all the wonders that Jackson Kolb didn't get to accomplish the rest of the way.
Aw.
Yeah, so.
Enjoy.
Enjoy, everybody. Here's a word from our sponsor. Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Top Chef Rundown, the finale, going over episodes 9 through 14. Once again, I'm here with my lovely wife, Kaylee.
I'm back.
Yeah.
So, not going over it with Joel, mainly because he has had so much stuff going on.
He has a social life while we don't.
Right. We just sit at home and watch our Top Chef.
He has friends that live around him while, or at least for myself, I don't. So, sorry. Sorry to bring it down.
I know.
It's just kind of the truth.
It happens. But, we got Biscuit in the house.
Yeah. Biscuit's my friend.
Yeah. First one to kick it off, Top Chef. Houston, episode 9, bring soul and honor of Freedman's town and most difficult elimination. And once again, all these articles, Brittany, Brito, Garley, huge round of applause.
Thank you.
Yeah. Big show of support here. And Pollyanna Roca.
Oh.
Yeah. She did episode 10. Yeah. So big shout out to them working for Eater Houston and doing a great job. Going over it here, the challenges for episode 9, we're looking at going over mainly Jae Jung trying to figure out how she's going to incorporate her Korean heritage into food, as well as Ashley Shanti creating an all-yellow curried vegetable puree, and Evelyn Garcia just being a rock star, like, the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
As always. But going in, the quickfire round, they announced the chefs are required to create a monochromatic vegetarian dish. So Jae Jung is trying to do a red strawberry gochujang glazed beet. And then Evelyn is trying to do the color black by using black garlic. Luke Culpin's excitement to cook with vegetables, a strength of his, is through the roof. So much so that he nearly runs face first into Buddha Low. Yeah. So there was some conflict here.
Yeah. Big drama.
Yeah. Big drama. Then you've got the elimination round. By the way, Damar Brown, known for his serious face, is skeptical about creating an all-green dish since so much of the cooking world prides itself on contrast but earns immunity thanks to a beautiful broccoli steak with a harissa glaze, chermoula, and a creamy avocado puree. So Damar, once again, stepping up, being the winner of these quickfires. He's won quite a few.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting so far. And then you've got the elimination round. Before chefs are tasked with the elimination round, Zion Escobar, the executive director of the Houston Freedmen's Town Conservancy, gives the chefs and guest judges Don Burrell and Kwame Onwuachi a tour of Freedmanstown, drilling in the significance of Juneteenth and its origin, which Juneteenth coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, this episode is from, what, April?
Yeah, it was around April.
So it was getting close.
Yeah. And, but yeah, and many local pioneers like Jack Yates, who is credited with being the father of Black Houston. But yeah, going over that, the biggest oops of the episode, known for making picturesque dishes, Boudelot aims to pay homage to his belated father, but worries about going simple. He settles on making a humble nasi lemak, a Malaysian curry that his grandmother makes. But like Shanti, Lowe's curry components too lacked a pop when combined, according to Judge Gail Simmons. This is the second time Lowe has failed to wow the judges with his home cuisine. Yeah. You know, he's just trying his best.
Yeah.
That's all you can ask.
They all are.
Yeah. The best turnaround was series face Damar Brown. His goal, he said, was to channel the ingenuity of the formerly enslaved. When collard greens hit the cornbread, it's a match made in heaven, Burrell oozes. And Onwuachi says there is no way Brown could have made the greens more perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, good episode for him.
It was, yeah. The winner, though, judges praise Garcia, Brown, and Wallace for their soulful dishes once again, noting how difficult it is to choose a favorite. But in the end, it was Jung's impressive homage to her Korean heritage that they could not forget. Her Mama Kim's flaked cod with Korean sweet potatoes, kimchi with pomegranate, and shrimp bisque was a true showstopper. And I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's...
Yeah, I was glad she won.
Yeah, that is quite the showstopper. That is for sure.
Yeah, kimchi with pomegranate.
Sounds good.
Would be interesting.
Yeah. And the shrimp bisque.
Mm.
I think that could be better than lobster. I mean, at least that's what I think. And then flaked cod.
I haven't had it, so.
Yeah. It could be pretty good. Pretty good. The loser, though, we got Culpin. Chefs eliminated Culpin for his tight meatball that lacked enough fat to make it more tender. Still, they emphasized that his elimination was no easy choice. And despite all of my frustration with Culpin's seasoning indifference, I'm sad to see him go.
Yeah, they really didn't like his meatball.
they threw a lot of shade on it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole episode, it was kind of sad towards the end.
Yeah,
Mr. Noma, he's gone.
Yeah,
you know. But yeah, so that was episode 9. Moving on to Top Chef episode 10. In Houston, they send the chefs on a NASA mission to Mars. So episode 10, what we're looking at is the first quickfire round. The chefs meet up at the Houston Farmers Market, which Houston chef Evelyn Garcia describes as a Mexican market. Dubbed over Spanish guitar and camera zoom-ins on chili peppers, serapes, and mangoes set an obvious scene as the chefs walk in to greet host Padma, who is joined by former Top Chef contestant Claudette Zepeda and a whole lot of Chipotle merch.
I still like Qdoba more.
Yeah,
Qdoba, I think they should be more prevalent. Like in-shows sponsored.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
They've got a bigger, banker, basically.
I guess.
You know. Yeah. So for the challenge here, the chefs will have 45 minutes to shop for ingredients and cook up their takes on Tex-Mex fajitas with a Chipotle-sponsored prize of $10,000 for the winner. The usual panic ensues as everyone grabs what they need and heads to their stations, except for Ashley, who appears to struggle finding her ingredients. She kind of took forever. That's
really
what I
did.
Remember.
I think she came back at like 25 minutes or something.
She had like definitely the, Shanti finally arrives at the station with 24 minutes mm-hmm. left. Like, that is way too short a time.
Yeah.
I, yeah. But overall, the six contestants present their dishes and Lakshmi makes the tasting rounds with Zepeda. Chef Damar Brown is critiqued for making his fajitas too thick and his salsa too sweet. While Shanti is called out for failing to fully plate her dish, along with Jung, who also presented a half-finished dish. Wallace Garcia and Chef Boudelot were all praised for bringing skill and flavor to the challenge. And ultimately, Wallace was announced the winner.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, Mr. Mississippi.
Yeah.
Yeah. But going to the elimination round, Lakshmi brings out Chef Marcus Samuelson's very famous PBS show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a pretty good show.
Yeah, it was a good show. Can't remember the name of it for the life of me.
But he highlighted like immigrant communities in the U.S.
Yeah,
and like their influence on cuisine. It was super cool.
Yeah, brought history, immigration, different things from the U.S. that also influenced their foods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, check it out. It is on PBS. If you have a PBS app.
Yeah.
Their NASA-themed elimination challenge had the chefs thinking like food scientists create dishes for astronauts on an imagined mission to Mars. The challenge has strict guidelines to avoid freestanding liquids and possible crumbs because up there, everything floats. So I'll admit this challenge not only was weird, but it just kind of seemed out in left field the whole time. Like, they have to cook food that you can eat in space, but at the same time make it fancy for them.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do both, and so I know they're like, well, that's the challenge.
Yeah, but you have to, you know, challenge them.
I guess. It just seems like one of those things, like, all the people in this room, they've spent their whole career doing this, and they're like, yeah, we're going to have you do this challenge in a few hours.
It's probably just trying to highlight like innovation and
right.
How can you improve upon like this freeze-dried food basically?
Yeah. Yeah. How can you bring more types of food?
Mm-hmm.
Cause I think one of them mentioned that like there was like a chicken enchilada that they really liked. Yeah, and they were like, that's pretty much the only one that has a lot of spice. And it was like, huh?
That's pretty sad.
Yeah. But yeah, so they go through the whole challenge. Wallace, he brought his Mississippi gumbo to the judges, who unanimously loved it. Jung and Brown are up last, but they both appear to lack confidence in their dishes. According to the judges, Jung's bulgogi turned out mushy, and her gochujang barley is undercooked, while Brown's chicken gravy with rice and hot pickled peppers severely lacked in creativity. The winner was Garcia, Wallace, and Lowe themselves in the top, and Lowe, Boudelot, being named the winner for his creative interactive dessert, which played to his strengths and showed technique without being gimmicky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The loser was Shanti, Jung, and Brown, and they received extremely poor critiques. After deliberation, the judges announced the loser, and it was Jung.
I was so sad.
It was sad.
She
it was
like
sad.
My underdog. Like,
yeah, she was.
She was like going up, 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 up.
Right.
And then just shows you like one week you can be super great and perfect, and then the next week you're gone.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
Yeah. It's not called Okay Chef.
No.
It's called Top Chef.
Yeah.
And poor Jung was at the bottom. But yeah, she is asked to pack her knives and go. And so that was the end of episode 10, going from a NASA to the mission to Mars. Then going over Top Chef Houston episode 11, hosts a family reunion and a seafood feast in Galveston. Oh, boy. This one, they always have to have like a family episode where the family members or like loved ones
mm-hmm.
are brought in. And it's like this we're going to reinvigorate them to like push them across the finish line.
Right.
And it's a feel good episode. I don't want to detract from that. But at the same time, you kind of feel like they just ask these loved ones, in this episode at least, what are your favorites? Your person is going to make that. And that was it. That was the whole point.
Right.
They're just going to make what you like, and then we're going to judge what you like, even though it isn't really the dish that they chose to make. It was the dish the loved one chose.
Well, I think it, you know, it's like you're at a restaurant, I guess, and maybe there's something on the menu that you didn't create or really like to make or something, but you kind of have to make it. And so it just goes to show their skill set of, like, you know, what can they come up with off the top of their heads? And then also how can they, I guess, adapt and like be creative with something that's already set in place. So I don't know. I didn't have much of an issue with it.
I didn't have an issue with it until after the episode was over. And then I was thinking about it and I'm just like, if you got sent home on this challenge, you basically have to blame your loved one. I mean, it's like one of those things like, oh, it could be technique. It could be, but overall, like, it wasn't the dish you chose to make at all. Like,
well, they've had other challenges though, where it's like, you have this theme.
Yeah, that's
true. You need
to
make something based on this. So it's like, they didn't
get to
choose
pick
or get to, you know, they had to, like I was saying, make something from that set, you know, requirement.
I'm just looking for somebody to blame, I think
you are. You're very antagonistic, and I have to be, like, the sappy, like, feel-good counterbalance.
Yeah, but we were happy to see Shota.
Yeah.
Nakajima.
Shota was on the last season.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's been on a lot of stuff lately.
Yeah.
Even though he didn't win. That's the cool thing about Top Chef. Yeah, I love his laugh. He cracks me up. He's also on Somebody Feed Phil.
Yes.
This most recent season.
Yeah,
so
season 5.
Yeah, go ahead and watch that too. Unrelated shout out, but.
Yeah. No, I mean, Shota, he has a very interesting little backstory, and he's based out of the Pacific Northwest in Seattle.
Jinx.
And he was on the Portland episodes. And he is an interesting chef because he does chicken karage.
Yes.
That's like his thing. So he's not doing the typical Japanese thing of going towards ramen or sushi or, you know, that kind of thing. He's doing the karage.
He's going
saying
for that fried chicken.
Yeah. He's like, this is it. Japanese fried chicken.
Heck,
here we go. Yeah. They're on the water in Galveston. Was there a quick fire? Yeah, there was. Capitalizing off of all the wonderful seafood in Galveston, chefs are required to craft a seafood tower with a hot and cold component. And that's tough.
I would think so, because I know some seafood's, like, picky.
Yeah.
Not picky, but it's, like, it's tricky
to
work with.
It's either meant to be hot, meant to be cold.
And all I know is it costs a lot at restaurants and
stuff. A seafood
stuff.
Tower.
And so that's probably why, or a reason why it costs so much, is because there's a lot of technique that has to go into it.
Yeah.
For it to be good.
Yeah. And then Sarah Welch, who's already missing the many cushy in-house amenities of Last Chance Kitchen.
Yeah. Side note, she came back.
She comes
she,
back.
She won the Last Chance Kitchen. She won like six?
Yeah, six or seven in a
six
row.
Or seven in a row. And I think,
man,
I don't know who she was tied with, but I think they said she was tied with someone for like the most. So
yeah,
it was... is a good comeback story.
She had to beat Jackson Kolb to come back, and it was a delivery challenge.
It was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
She made like Jamaican Asian.
Oh, food? Right. Yeah, Jamaican. That's what she said. Yeah, Jamaican.
It looked really good.
Yeah.
She beat his Italian food, which I'm like, come on, man.
I know.
Like, you know, gotta go outside your limits.
Well, they both apparently did an amazing job, but she just, I think they said something about a crispy chicken, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
And how she kept it crispy, they were impressed. And that was like what put it over the top.
I don't know, pasta for delivery to me is iffy.
Right, definitely. It's a risk.
I think that's, you know, that was my main thing.
Yeah, because the pasta is just going to absorb whatever it's in.
Yeah, you know? And you want it hot.
Right.
And when it's delivered, it's, anyway.
Yeah.
She came back.
She did. She won. She came back. She was like, hey, everybody.
So now we're back to six people.
Back. Yeah.
So it was like, it went down to five last episode, and then she was like, hey, I'm back.
Yeah.
Peace.
Another Last Chance Kitchen alum.
Yeah.
Wow. And Ashley's just like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to get back in here, and now we got another LCK, a Last Chance Kitchen. Boudelot, he created an underwhelming cold jumbo shrimp and XO cocktail and soft shell taco yaki, which Nakajima says was too creamy.
Ugh.
Yeah. Sounds kind of bad.
Yeah.
Ashley Shanti, she paired her oysters on the half shell with a country ham kanzuri barbecue sauce. I don't know what that is.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, they've said it in the episode. They did. I didn't hear it.
There's lots of things on this show I've never heard of.
Yeah. And then peel and eat jerk shrimp.
Nice.
That's a winner.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Nick Wallace, he learned late in the quickfire challenge that there's no tortilla press for his masa. No.
Drama. See, this show has so much drama.
So much. Instead, he had to accompany his grilled shrimp and mango chili vinaigrette with an orzo salad that the judges praised.
Nice.
Once again, Nick Wallace overcoming all leaps and bounds to win the day.
Yeah.
For his cold dish, he offered oysters on the half shell with a watermelon mignonette that Nakajima says is his favorite of the day. Once again, I have no idea.
Mignonette?
Yeah, mignonette.
Is that like filet mignon?
I have no idea.
I don't either.
I would guess like a vinaigrette, but it's a mignon. I don't know what mignonette. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. Damar Brown, he did a rendition of raw oysters with peach and a tamarind vinaigrette and Thai chili and a hot seared shrimp with a shrimp and crab XO sauce. That the judges loved. If I can say the words.
So, just really fast, you've probably noticed, I'm not talking about this right now. You've probably noticed Devin's voice is very off. He was a little sicky the other day.
Yeah.
It was not COVID, thankfully.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It had to do with, like, his esophagus, and so he's, you know, I'm trying to do my part. It's hard, because I listen more than I speak, but, so he's okay. He's just kind of, like, going through puberty again.
Yeah.
So don't make fun of him.
Yeah, don't make fun
That's all I want to say.
Yeah.
Because we're, like, halfway through, and it hasn't been addressed.
No. Oh, man.
So... Okay, back to our scheduled programming.
Anyway, yeah. No, it's, ugh. Just feels like my vocal cords got scorched, and I don't know how to get them back. You drink water, you do other things, and you're like, oh, that feels so much better, and then you start talking, and somehow it's worse.
Yeah.
And you're like, no.
Yeah. I have a podcast.
But when I talk like this, it sounds too bad. And then I talk like this, and it sounds weird. And so, yeah, it's just, you know.
I didn't want to, like, throw you under the bus or something.
No.
I just wanted to put that out there.
Throw it out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So people can send you like hate flowers.
Man. Oh.
Flowers. Yeah, like those fruit bouquets.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Give me edible arrangements.
Yeah. Poor Devin. Yeah. His throat's a little
I like pineapple, wacky. Watermelon, cantaloupe.
Make sure they're chocolate dipped, yeah, please. Chocolate. Strawberries.
Yeah, strawberries. If you get grapes, make sure they're the cotton candy.
Oh yeah. Grapes. Those are the best.
Yeah. Also Marionberry.
We will also accept cash or Venmo, PayPal donations.
Totally.
This is a tough time, right?
This is a tough time. Yeah. Become a Convenant supporter, just like our Convenant Dylan, and subscribe, pay anywhere, whatever you would like to, between $5 to $10, $20 a month. I don't care.
Only $10 a month. You can, you can help Devin's. Yeah,
you can help my vocal cords recover at a quicker rate.
Yep.
Yeah. But the elimination round, before we get to it, Evelyn Garcia, she won the quickfire with her Thai Cajun spin, crafting oysters on the hot half shell with a fish sauce vinaigrette, chili oil, and crispy shallots, and a no frills Thai Cajun boil with Thai chili butter and roasted lime.
Honestly, that sounds like a really good combo. Yeah. Thai Cajun.
Like
I've never heard of that before, and but I bet those flavors would be so good.
Oh, yeah. Especially with the lime. Mm-hmm, oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, super good. But the elimination round, the chefs recoup from the beach cook-off and head off to a vacation home. Oh no, where they prepare a family style dish for a VIP group of family that's having a reunion. And almost immediately after being given the flavor profiles for the family member they're preparing for, chefs begin to suspect that it's someone they know well.
That's the part I liked about it. Yeah. It was like a surprise.
It was. Yeah, they didn't tell them in the beginning. No. And then they were like, this sounds like my sister.
Yeah.
And then another one's like, my mom likes this stuff.
Stop making fun of them. You try to find the negative in all this stuff.
And I'm just imagining like the producers and the cameramen who do know what's going on. And they're just giddy, like behind the scenes, like, this sounds like my sister. And they're like, because we got your sister. And they're just like, oh, we did such a good thing.
Devin. gosh.
Yeah.
What is wrong with
you? I don't know. It's just funny. But it was a good episode, and it's good to see the chefs have fun.
It was good, except I hated the chef. That's what you're saying.
No, I was critical, but you are right. Like, I was critical because I thought they didn't get to pick, really. But there are other challenges where they don't get to pick what they make.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, I get it, kind of now.
I'm right, you're wrong.
Right. I gotta shut up. I did like this because, like I said, you can see the chefs have fun a little bit and kind of get a little bit past their food life a little bit, you know? Lo is immediately realized that his wife is on the VIP list and decides to make pasta amatriciana or matriciana. I don't know. Anyway, I'm trying. The first dish his wife made him that made him fall in love with her.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. And then others begin crafting their family-style dishes. Quickfire winner Garcia almost immediately recognizes her father's request for eggs. That's me.
That is you.
Yeah. I'm like, son, make me eggs. They're like, oh, well, do you know how? I'm like, all 24.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And Southeast Asian and Mexican cuisine, and uses the extra 30 minutes that she's given to fry up a crispy red snapper with a sweet chili vinegar, sticky coconut rice, and pickled chilies. And if I do say so myself, her dad's a catch. Look at him.
He's cute. He's adorable.
Yeah.
He's wearing this cute little, sun hat kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not a fedora, but I don't I don't know all the hat names.
Yeah. It's a pinched, what do they call that? It's like a...
It's like what I imagine you wear in, like, Cuba.
Yeah.
You know? Like those kinds of hats.
It's like you were saying, it's not a fedora, but it's like a long-brimmed, pinched top hat. And then he's wearing, like, a polo.
He's an adorable dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, watch out, Evelyn. If your dad's married, like, he's going to get taken here soon. The flavor profile Wallace is provided seems all over the place. Crab, pork, and chocolate. And it leads him astray. Chef Eric Williams is the guest of Damar Brown, who is a mentor and friend and his boss.
Yeah, that's, like, big...
like...
big shoes to fill.
Yeah. Like...
that's like you really have to impress your boss.
Yeah, I'm gonna invite my boss.
Well, it's because his mom and his aunt, I think, couldn't make it.
Right, right. I just what I was thinking of is like it is his mentor and friend, so it's not like a tumultuous thing. But like, I guess what I was thinking in my head is like you're already under the pressure of cooking for Calicchio. And Padma, and then you're like, yeah, let's just throw my boss in there.
Yeah, I'd be pretty nervous.
Yeah, I would be just like, oh, crap, why did I do that? But yeah, the winner, though Lowe's past dishes have fallen flat while trying to channel influences from his family, Lowe impresses the judges with his Marry Me pasta, with Judge Gail Simmons calling it the most rustic dish he's made this season with deeper flavors. And Lowe won a $10,000 from Vrbo, rent a vacation home anywhere around the world.
Isn't that awesome?
Oh my gosh.
Like, and, I want to be on TV if I can win this stuff.
And he already has his eyes on Rome. Roma. Yeah. And the loser. Oh man.
That really picture, got you.
That picture encapsulates it so much. Oh, man. She's, like, wearing a pink sun hat, and she's sweating through it, and she's, like, poking a hot strawberry. Poor Ashley Shanti. Shanti took notes from her mother's profile, served a paella-inspired heirloom rice with red shrimp, undercooked calamari, her biggest mistake of all. She sent packing for the second time this season.
That sucks.
That does, like, man. She was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
She was, yeah.
Like, you're trying to do your best, especially for your family member. Oh, man. And then all the judges are like, you suck. And you leave. It's like,
yeah.
I would feel terrible.
Oh, man. She's just sweating like crazy.
Yeah, that photo really got to you, didn't it?
Because she just looks miserable. She's like, God, cooking.
I mean, she looks focused.
She looks focused, yeah. I think you're like projecting. It's more of like her head is looking down. And like you were saying, she doesn't look stupid or something. It just looks miserable. Like she's right in the sun and she's having to poke this hot something in the pan and she's sweating through her hat.
Yeah.
Like, oh man.
Bye, Ashley.
And she has long sleeves on. She like, oh man.
You did poor a good Ashley.
Job. Yeah. The favorite moments, seeing the chefs reunite with their favorite people for the first time in weeks. I'm not crying, you're crying.
See?
Yeah. And when Lakshmi,
I'm from Missouri,
announces that the chefs themselves are the other guests and tells them to take off their aprons and join their friends and family for the meal they cooked.
Yeah, I that like was those nice. Parts
of
the show.
Because they are genuinely, like, shocked, usually. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, wow.
They're like, what?
Yeah.
We can eat?
Yeah, we can enjoy ourselves? Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Who would have thought?
Yep. But moving on to episode 12, without Ashley.
Yeah.
They return to Galveston for an epic catch and cook. So they go fishing, folks. They go fishing. The judges decide to skip the quick fire round because there's no more, like, immunity
right.
or, yeah, any of those things coming up. But the challenge, the elimination challenge, is you have to catch part of your winning dish. So they had to catch the fish that they were going to cook.
Mm-hmm.
Evelyn just rock-starring it up, makes the first catch, a small catfish that she isn't thrilled about, but she later redeems herself with two hefty redfish. Damar Brown, he caught the second fish, a juicy redfish measuring over 37 inches. And the momentum on the sea builds, with each chef catching enough fish to successfully make a dish.
I think it was staged, but that's just me.
Yeah, I always go with like what Bourdain used to always joke about, which is like they had like prop fish.
Yeah.
That they would like throw in with the hook already in. Right. And they're like, oh, look at me get it.
Yeah.
It's like, no. Like, you guys would have to be out there for hours. Like, oh, man. Yeah. And of course, like, I think what's crazy about them having to fish and actually catch it is you don't hear them talking about like the nuances of fishing at all. Like, oh yeah, you're trying to catch a redfish. Yeah, you're going to want to use this type of bait and have this much of a lead on your hook or anything. Like, it's almost like they have the boat assistants like cast it out and set it up. And then they're just like, wait 5 minutes and your fish will be here. Like, it's like you're saying, it comes off a little stagey, but you know, like,
that's TV.
That's TV. Yeah. But yeah, so they have to go to a bunch of local markets and start figuring out what they want to cook. And they are cooking for Chef Belud. That's right. Daniel Belud.
I never remember his name, but when I see him, I'm like, I'm like, oh, he's a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, I know that.
Yeah, he, I don't know why it always pops up in my head, but I just imagine a little happy Frenchman, because that's what he looks like to me. It's just like this little happy Frenchman. He's like, hello, I'm Daniel Belud. And he just kind of goes,
well,
yeah.
They have a lot of things that are nice
in
France.
They do.
So.
Yeah. And Daniel Belud, what I like about him, unlike some other French chefs, like, who are big and famous and that kind of thing, he's a lot like Eric Repair in the sense of he's very kind.
Like, yeah, he comes off more approachable than other people.
He's very nice and kind, and he's not, like, kind of, like, nose in the air, you know, type. He's very down-to-earth.
Hoity-toity.
Yeah. The winner of them catching their fish and doing everything. Though Sarah Welch is one of the last chefs to catch a fish, she turns it into a winning dish, smoking her redfish and covering it in a pastrami spice and pairing it with carrot butter and Parisian gnocchi for a pastrami sandwich that blows judges away. And says that the Simmons, Gail, she says that Welch's creation will be impressive no matter where she goes. And Belud says Welch's Gulf Snapper Pseudo Crudo, which is made with silken tofu and kraut broth, is perfectly executed with a beautiful combination of warm and cold elements. Yeah. The loser, though, it sounds so harsh saying that. The loser.
Like, you suck.
Yeah. Close friends, Nick Wallace and Brown sadly end up in the bottom. And Brown makes a bland snapper crudo with marinated apples and radish and a coconut vinaigrette, plus a blackened red fish with marinated vegetables and herb salad using a vinaigrette with ground up peanuts that judges say make things too grainy. And if you can't tell by that last sentence, he had too much stuff.
Yeah.
Like, dude, edit. You gotta, like, cut down. But yeah, Brown is crushed when he figures out that Wallace is sent home.
Oh, that was really sad.
It was. Because
they got really close.
They did. He said my big brother just left.
Yeah.
Oh. But yeah, it was Wallace's redfish tacos.
I was sad to see Nick go.
I was too.
I liked his, like, attitude about stuff.
Right.
And, you know, he just seemed like a really good guy.
Yeah. He was always, like, cool as a cucumber. Even
yeah.
When, and he always got dealt the worst hand. On, like, quick fires and stuff.
Yeah.
And he always came out on top. And he was, and I got to give him credit, he was very, he did not let go of the Mississippi thing, which, you know, coming from a state that is not highly popular.
Right.
It's very easy to say, well, I'll just go the route of, you know, Texas, right? Galveston, blah, blah, blah. But no, he made a gumbo. and was like, I'm going to stick with it and do these things. And the barbecue challenge, he knocked that out of the park.
Right.
So it's one of those things where I just like that he stuck to his guns when he had to. And he was really cool and calm the whole time, even though he got the worst pork rinds to make something that was like a dessert or something. It was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. So, yeah, poor Nick Wallace. He got knocked off. And then we've got Top Chef Houston, episode 13. They go to a, what was it, UNESCO?
UNESCO something. Cultural,
yeah, cultural gastro, yeah, UNESCO City of Gastronomy, designated in the United States. Yes, you're thinking New York City, Los Angeles.
No.
Is it Houston themselves? Is it New Orleans?
Nope.
Tucson.
Yeah, it's Tucson and San Antonio.
Yeah.
Are the only two places only in two. The U.S., which I thought was so interesting.
Crazy.
Because I would have never guessed.
I would have never guessed that either. So into Tucson they go. Yeah, they have a sweet and spicy challenge. And so they do the quick fire with only four people left. Chefs are feeling the pressure of the competition, but are also encouraged by how far they made. Sarah Welch is feeling confident with the competition's move to Tucson, as if she's leaving some of her baggage behind in Houston and starting anew. Damar Brown and Evelyn are reflecting on the sacrifices and hard work they've pooed in. Because I was reading Buddha Lowe, who has used the 2-week break to prepare for the finale and learn more about Native American and Mexican cooking cuisines. Of course he did.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Very studious.
Yeah. But he is thrilled at the opportunity to learn more in Tucson because of its designation as a city of gastronomy. The episode begins with a lesson from Carlotta Flores, the owner of El Charro Cafe, which is one of the country's oldest Mexican restaurants. But it's also home to the chimichanga and most famous carne seca, thinly sliced meat that is dried in the sun. In their last quickfire competition of the season, chefs are required to make a meal using carne seca. So it's like basically jerky.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like beef jerky, but better.
Yeah, yeah. Lowe creates an upside down tostada, intended to be respectful of the ingredients. Brown grills an avocado and pairs it with carne seca vinaigrette, fried tortillas, grilled corn, but it lacks texture. Garcia's creamy grits dish with guajillo, carne seca, and chayote relish with yuzu is named the second favorite of the day. With Flores saying that it has inspired her to use more grits at her restaurant. Major bragging rights.
Yeah.
And Welch creates a festive and colorful carne seca gravy over polenta with a soft egg, morel mushrooms, and blackberry salsa. Hmm. Never heard of blackberry salsa
until this. No, but I could, you know.
It would work. Yeah. 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 Welch wins the challenge in her first quick fire, earning 30 minutes of an additional cook time.
Nice.
So Last Chance Kitchen, once again, coming up from behind.
Yeah.
Yeah. The elimination round, Maria Mazon, chef and alumna from Top Chef Portland, and Jesus Manuel Garcia, a board member of Mission Garden, welcome chefs to the Sonoran Desert in Arizona, home of more than 300 species of cactus and chiltepin, the only native pepper in the United States. After taking in this history and agricultural lesson, judges are required to make two savory dishes, one with cactus and one with chiltepin, which is hard to say. Chiltepin. Garcia decides to prop up the nopal cactus, a humble ingredient often used in her home, Mexican El Salvadoran household, to create a nopal relleno. Inspired by the chili relleno, Garcia accompanies her nopal relleno with shrimp puree, amazing, raw nopal, and then marigold that captivates the judges for its creativity and unique quality, earning her the win.
Yeah.
Yeah. The loser, though, Damar Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brown uses the newfound skills prompted from YouTube to create a pork shoulder that incorporates barbecue sauce made with prickly pear cactus and chiltepin. It is a Haitian pickled relish and grilled nopales and red bean puree. Despite the chiltepin being the crux of the challenge, judges say the flavor of the pepper didn't come through, resulting in his elimination. Yeah. Goodbye, DeMar. And then we are on to the finale.
We made it.
We made it, everybody. We are at the finale.
Yeah.
It is bringing best desserts, another reunion, and a reigning champ. That's right. And it's got Eric Repair, mm-hmm. which is the best part of the whole episode, in my opinion. I love Eric Repair. And then there were three. Top Chef Houston, they are still... in Tucson. Mm-hmm. It's a second week in Tucson. You've got Evelyn, who has a passion for Latin and Southeast Asian flavors. Buddha Lowe, who's a New York chef by way of Australia, who is known for his over-the-top techniques and decorative dishes and being a total freaking nerd. He's a nerd. Aww. Of this show, which I say that lovingly. Because I'm a nerd of this show.
Yeah.
I watch it like crazy. But he literally would be quoting how people got eliminated from prior seasons, which I think would be so hard to remember.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh, yeah, Top Chef season 12, episode 7, where Timothy screwed up on his salt
ratio. Yeah, I can't remember, like episodes and things like that. But, you know, certain things I could remember.
Yeah. So, yeah, Buddha's a nerd. He's a total nerd. Nerd alert. He's a nerd. Then you've got Sarah Welch. It says Detroit's Sarah Welch. Could have fooled me. I don't know why, but reading that, I just understood that she... I thought it was Jamaica.
Well, she lived there for a while.
Right. Yeah, she's a quirky chef whose passion for produce and fire in Last Chance Kitchen won her place back in the finals. And they allow them to call people to be a sous chef.
Yeah, I like that part too.
Yeah, that's a cool deal.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah chooses Robert Hernandez, Mr. Cool Shirt, if yes. everybody remembers yes. from the early.
Throwing it back.
Yeah, throwing it back. And yeah, it was her partner who she got eliminated with.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Like, they were BFFs. Hey. Sorry. Stop, you antagonist.
I know. I'm so sorry. God, these people are so good at what they do. And then I
just
throw just
these jealous
comments.
And
I
you're like projecting your insecurities onto them.
I just throw these comments. I'm like, you're a bunch of idiots.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call the person I was eliminated with.
It's like that one meme or whatever where it's like people watching the Olympics,
right.
They're like, I wouldn't have done that. And it's like a drawing of someone sitting on their couch, like eating.
Right.
It's like,
yeah, should have ran immediately when the gun went off.
Yeah.
Like, no duh. But anyways, the table, the serving, the judges, you have Tom, right? Stephanie Izzard. Or Izzard. I can't remember how it's pronounced.
I think it's Izzard,
yeah. Winner of Top Chef Season 4. Renowned French chef Eric Repair. Yeah.
You couldn't tell. Devin loves him.
I love Eric Repair. He is hilarious. He was a good friend of Bourdain.
Mm-hmm.
He's an amazing chef. And he's just great.
Yeah,
he's awesome. And he's got that French accent that just...
Oui, oui.
Yeah, it woos all the girls. Oh, little Eric.
Mm.
I know, he's kind of...
He...
I don't know. He's got a hard time.
I mean, I'm not one to judge, but...
Yeah, the insecurities thing, you want to throw that line back out there?
He's no, got I'm a big mouth.
Man.
He does. It's like not proportional.
Yeah, you're kind of right. Sorry, Eric. I love you to
death. We love you.
I'm kind of fat, so... That's
yeah.
We all have our flaws.
Yeah, I'm not much to speak about.
Yeah,
so
yeah. And I got a crappy voice right now. So
yeah.
That's yeah. Bricia Lopez. She's the restaurateur and co-owner of Gueleguetza, Gregory Gordy.
We like Gregory. Yeah. He's in Portland.
Yeah. But he is an alum of Top Chef Boston, which we went through the Rolodex of cities. Yeah. And what was, they haven't been to Atlanta.
They've never been to Atlanta or Georgia. They've never been to Tennessee.
So Nashville or Memphis.
They've never been to Missouri. Yeah. So like Kansas City or St. Louis.
I hope they go to St. Louis or Kansas City. One day.
Yeah.
I would like to, especially for barbecue.
I've been to both.
Right.
Because unfortunately, that's the furthest I've ever traveled.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that changes soon. But, you know, I've had food from both places, and there's a lot more cuisine.
Totally.
Than you might think.
Yeah. Especially St. Louis.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, I would not doubt if they had episodes in St. Louis. It would be interesting on ooey gooey butter cake and St. Louis style pizza. I think that they would play quirky music and try to make it sound weird. But let's be honest, there's a lot of Italian. There's the Italian neighborhood.
There's so much Italian influence.
Yeah.
There's a lot of German, Polish.
Yeah, totally.
Influence.
Yeah.
There's so many like Mexican restaurants, but
they're Tex-Mex.
Yeah.
Technically. But,
yeah. Which is not a thing out here.
Yeah.
And so when I had it, I'm like, what? But it would be interesting to go into more.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's quite a few places they still
have yet
to go.
Even though 19 seasons. Like, that's just
crazy.
Well, because
they visited places multiple times.
Right.
So, like, one season has been L.A., but then another season has been all around California.
Right.
And then there's, like, Texas. They've been in Texas in different iterations, like, 3 times.
Right.
So, I'm sure they'll make their way, you know, to more places. But
yeah, I'm sure Indianapolis is up there on one of the...
I'm kidding. I can't speak about it. Yeah, I've never been. Man.
I just imagine like Padma being like, we're here in lovely Cleveland.
We're here in Omaha.
Right. We're in Omaha. Yeah. Dun, 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 dun. Which my mom said about the last episode over One of a Kinds, Nebraska, that I might have been a little harsh and mean to Nebraskans. And all I have to say is that I am laughing with you. Nebraska. I grew up in Missouri. I was in a flyover state. We don't like to be called the flyover state, but that's where we were. You see a lot of brown when you're flying over it. Just land with a couple rivers. And so, no, I mean, the Reuben is an iconic sandwich, for one. The Frenchie, why aren't more states doing that? So it's interesting.
I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. If you guys haven't realized yet, Devin's pretty critical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, very methodical, has to analyze and nitpick things.
Right.
And
right.
So even if it's like Oregon or California or somewhere else that everyone loves or whatever, he is going to find something wrong with it.
As I lovingly love to say, nothing is perfect. Nothing is perfect. Everyone has flaws. You need to accept them.
You're a glass half empty.
Yeah. Yeah. Because otherwise it would be full. That's the way it should be. Anyway, sorry. We went off topic a little. The final challenge, anybody who watches Top Chef knows, basically you're down to the last like 3 or 4 usually. And they have to make their menu, like their food for the final chefs. And so they all get to create whatever basically they want.
Do you have any critiques about this? Because you were just
I do. So here's my thing with the final challenge So my only critique of the final challenge is one, in this final challenge, they put the kitchen about a half a mile away from the table So there were people walking across like a field towards cactuses to feed the judges. That seemed like a long walk of shame.
Yeah, I felt bad for those people.
Oh, man.
It was probably in the fall they did this, but I'm guessing Arizona's hot.
Right.
No matter what.
No matter
so
what.
I felt terrible. It's and like they were all the wearing black.
Yeah.
Like they were, you know, those black restaurant outfits.
Yeah.
So.
All black button ups with a black apron and then black pants, black shoes that are non-slip. Like, yeah. And then even the chefs, they would have to run out there, talk about their dishes.
And then run back.
Right. And then Buddha is running back and the other two chefs, Evelyn and Sarah, are like, stop running.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. So they put it so far away. Like, why did you do that? And then there were flies on the table and stuff.
Yeah. That'd throw me
off. They had these weird fans that I've never seen that before. They're like table fans that look like the multicolored hat with a propeller on top, but it was folded down because it was so hot.
Yeah. Guys, this is a peek into Devin's brain.
Yeah. I was just
nothing
like,
is ever perfect.
This is why you gotta have a couple people on set or in a room that you can look over at them and be like, I can tell that, you know, Tanner is annoyed. And Tanner loves to complain. So if there is anything wrong, talk to Tanner. Like, he will know. I'm Tanner.
Yeah.
So if anybody is ever in a room where they're like, you know, I want a good, honest opinion, I'm that person.
Oh, dear.
It's like, hey, Devin, did you like everything? I'm like, yeah, yeah. They're like, if you had to change anything, I'm like, okay, I have a list. So here's what. but no, the only other critique, the challenge itself. They get the sous chefs. They get to call in the prior sous chefs. I think it's a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been a couple times where that has backfired, like bad. Because they pick people that have just been eliminated.
Mm.
And they're just not in it. Like, they're still in the shock of, like, I just got eliminated right before. Like, I should be the one cooking here.
Right.
Not as a sous chef, but as, like, somebody who's trying to win. The other part of it is, and this is something that I've always wondered why they do it this way, they have them all cooking in the same kitchen.
Drama.
Yeah, they only do that for the drama.
Yeah.
I think if you really wanted to get like a good thing of them cooking, you would put them in separate kitchen areas.
It's TV though.
I know.
It's drama.
Plus it's probably pretty hard to find three kitchens.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to go to like a college campus.
Mhm.
Yeah. And then it would only have to be a quarter mile away from the table.
Okay, let's go back to who picked who.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. Sarah, she picked Robert Hernandez. Then you've got Buddha picking Jackson Kalb,
yes.
Which all of them immediately started saying, oh, can you taste, you idiot?
No, they did not say that.
He said, I'm at 80%.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I can taste. But if people need a reminder, a competitive Boudalo calls on Jackson Kalb, who is known for nailing inventive and flavorful dishes despite losing his sense of taste and smell due to a previous bout with COVID-19. Buddha said, I just want the advantage. If not, I'm not beating him. I want him next to me.
Yeah.
Which is true, because Jackson was a great competitor.
Mm-hmm.
He was terrible at front of house, which we all saw that.
Yeah.
Which is why he got eliminated. But then he went into Last Chance Kitchen and gave Sarah a run for her money. And so I'm sure Sarah was kind of like, whoa. Like,
and then
Jackson's
who did Evelyn
here.
Pick?
Evelyn. Evelyn picked.
She picked Joe.
Joe?
Yeah.
Who's Joe?
Joe was also from Texas.
Joe was also a Texan.
Yeah, go up.
Oh, wait. No.
They were besties.
They were besties. Yeah.
Yeah, Joe's from Austin.
Joe is from
Viewers who love the Texas duo.
Yeah. See, I didn't even remember that. That was bad.
Because you've been too busy
pooping on people.
Yeah, pooping on people.
Sorry. Yeah. When Garcia calls on Austin's Joe Chan, reasoning that the two understand food in a similar way and share a special bond, which that was pretty evident. You know, they worked really well together. Yeah. Yeah. But overall, when it came right down to it, the winner was Boudelot. Yep, Houston's own Garcia clearly delighted the judges with her unique combination of Latin and Asian flavors, but in the end, it was Lowe's creativity, award-worthy attention to detail, and love of literally playing with his food that won judges over.
I was glad he won.
I was too.
I was hoping either him or Evelyn.
Right.
Not to discredit Sarah, but
yeah.
I think the last couple episodes she was kind of spotty, while the other two were a little more consistent.
Definitely. They seem to have more heart in it. Evelyn and Buddha did. I think Sarah, maybe Tucson just wasn't her place to be, like, inspired, you know? Sometimes you go to a certain place and everybody else is like, oh, I love this. And you're just like, I don't know what you guys see in this. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what's going on. And so it's one of those things where for her, like her main theme for The Last Cook was food waste and trying to, you know, do things to,
like, being resourceful.
Right. Being resourceful
around her.
And then foraging. So foraging things in Tucson, Arizona. So she said something to the extent of, like, she wanted the chefs to think of her theme as not wasteful, and that she went and foraged these things out in the desert and made this beautiful dish. And to me, I don't know why, but to me it just came up as, like, I'm grasping at straws. Like, right. I'm just trying to figure this out. Because, like, Buddha, it was like, my dad died. I'm doing this to win it for my dad.
Right.
But I work in New York. I'm from Australia. I have, you know, Asian heritage. And I'm going in it. And he made a Mongolian lamb for, you know, essentially in honor of his dad. And that was an interesting dish. But yeah, there was a lot of those things. And then Evelyn, being from Houston, she had a lot of skin in the game just because she's like, I want to win it for my city. I want to win it for me, my family, everything that I did. And so whenever those two were the ones that were kind of the top runners, it was like, yeah, this fits my fantasy. This, yes, does it. But Buddha, was it his dessert that he made the leaves?
Yeah.
It was that like was
pumpkin,
cool.
Pumpkin pie, mille feuilles.
Mille feuilles.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
AKA Napoleon.
Right. Yeah.
It's one of my favorite desserts of all time.
Right.
It looked so good.
And he made these tuiles that were leaves.
Oh, my gosh. They looked real.
Right. And when you move the plate, it rustled like leaves.
If you don't win after that, then I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, through strained voice, through a whole season, Top Chef Houston. What'd you think, Kaylee?
I really enjoyed it. I know this is going to sound maybe kind of mean. I wish they weren't in Texas again.
Yeah.
Because it just seems like they've been there a lot. But, you know, I don't know a lot about Houston, so it was really cool to see it. And I grew to appreciate the setting more.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really like the season. Like I said, I like this show because, you know, they're competitive, but they will help each other. It's not like to the bone kind of competition like other shows are. It's like they're still humans. They'll still help each other out. And it's just cool to see what people think of and come up with. And yeah, I really like the season. I'm looking forward to the next season and seeing where they go to.
Yeah.
So
I, once again, this season, it is corny as it can be to people like Joel, right? Who never watched Top Chef.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny to go over it with him because he has no idea on half of this stuff. But if you know anything about, you know, restaurants, food, chefs, all those things. And I mean very little, just a little bit, you know, skin surface level, what's going on. I think what Top Chef does really well is shows you basically the future of restaurants with these chefs.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these chefs, I'm not kidding, you look in magazines, you look at Yelp, you look at top reviewed anything. And I don't know how many times have I said, oh, they were on Top Chef?
Quite a bit.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's how a lot of the restaurants in Portland or Seattle, mm-hmm. or, you know, it's like I will sit there and go through that. And the second I see their face or I see a name, I'm like, yep, they were on Top Chef. Like, that's how, and it's one of those things where being a Top Chef alum, it's a highly regarded thing.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I think it also proves that you're like, there's something about being under pressure that is a big thing for Top Chef and cooking in general. When everybody knows, like in real life, there's pressure during service. Like, you know, the rush hour service type of thing. But otherwise, it's a very creative field. And so there's something about these Top Chefs being the future of restaurants and being the future young chefs, but then also having such skill in the kitchen that it's like mind blowing. Like, it's how quickly they can do some of this stuff.
Yeah.
That most, you know, kitchens, they would spend 4 to 5 hours on, and they're doing it in two.
Right.
And by themselves, not even a full staff. They're just doing it by themselves. And so Top Chef this season, it just reiterated, like, when it comes to food competition shows, Top Chef, it's one of the ones that is highly regarded because of a reason, because it is good. Yeah. It's interesting. And so as much as I make fun of it and nitpick at it, I still love it.
Yeah.
It's good. It's a good show. Padma is a great host.
Mm-hmm.
She has a great depth of knowledge, especially of foods that maybe Tom is too afraid to try. That's what I'm guessing. But Tom Colicchio, you know, he has kind of the prestige, right? And so it's just interesting that they're still in it. Gail is a U.S. citizen now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she, you know, has been around the whole time. And so it's just been a cool ride to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't wait for season 20. I bet they do something big for 20.
I hope so.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what they did for 10.
Yeah. I don't know if they did anything.
It might have been like an All-Stars. A Top Chef All-Stars type of. Yeah. But anyway, that is the last one of our Top Chef rundown. I want to appreciate everybody who has listened this far, and to my lovely wife, Kaylee, and the good buddy of the pod, Joel, for going over all these episodes. We'll see everybody next season. Top Chef season 20, wherever that may be.
Mm-hmm.
We will see everybody next time.
Bye.
Goodbye, and sorry for my voice. It was so bad.
You're making it worse.
Yeah, I know. All right, everybody. We'll see you next
time. Bye.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Ream, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.